It's time to turn our attention now to women's football. Before we get in stuck into the action from the weekend, Nadine, there have been some more commitments to the women's AFL with Cora Staunton and Breed Stack both re-signing for the season ahead. To be expected, really, but I mean, great for the two women and great for the league as well.
Yeah, great for the two women. It was the announcement I'd been waiting for ages. I suppose not surprising at all with Cora, but I suppose with Breed, with, you know, family commitments and different things, a huge decision for her, and I'm absolutely delighted. I know Breed well, and, you know, she didn't get that first year because of the injury, and then last year she would have felt she was kind of learning the sport and she was only really getting her teeth into it, and it was such a short season. So really exciting times ahead for her. I know she's to make a stop off in San Fran for a family wedding on the way over, so it's a busy couple of weeks, but look, no better athlete, and really exciting. Like, I looked at Cora's stats the other day, I think she scored 47 goals in 40 games. I mean, unreal. And just for Breed, really looking forward to watching her again this year, and I think their team in general as well, you know, having spoken to Breed, like, they got off to a great start last year. I think they were like 4-for-4, and then things kind of dipped a little bit in the middle, so I'd say for both of the girls there's a bit of unfinished business in that regard, and, you know, they're such competitors, they'll want to drive the standards on there and drive the whole thing on, so really exciting for them. Yeah,
they're the numbers are still rising, you know, we're still seeing people making the commitment, deciding to head over. And do you feel it's going to devalue the championship, Nadine?
No, I don't. I don't. I don't think it'll devalue the championship. Will it affect teams? Yes. I think it's affecting me a little bit already, to be honest. You know, since Vicky's announcement, their form has dipped significantly, which I suppose we'll talk about in a few minutes. But no, the championship, look, the championship always keeps going. The championship's always bigger than any individual player or group of players. It'll affect a few counties for a while, but I think overall, you know, it's a good thing as well. I do think it's a good thing for players to get that opportunity to go away. As fans, we miss watching them. Every Monday when the AFLW post their guess whose feet these are doing the skills, my heart kind of misses a beat thinking who is going now. But no, I don't think it does. I think what it might do is put a bit of pressure on the LGFA to maybe, you know, promote the sport a little bit more and look at ways of retaining our players. It could be a good thing in another way.
How would you retain the players though?
Well, this is the thing, you know, your top counties, you're going to retain them naturally. I think it's your middle counties where you have superstar players who are probably going to go in their droves, which Mayo's an example. I think looking at, you know, the calm side of things, the AFLW looks way more appealing in that regard, so perhaps our exposure and maybe working a little bit on the media side of things might help. Looking at sponsorship even, and even the, you know, there's been a lot of initiatives within the LGFA in the last couple of weeks, and the players promoting them are players who are heading off.
James, you know? Let's flip it, right? So if 15 or 16 men from the championship left and went over to play in Australia, do you think it would be devalued if there were the top 15 or 16 players in
the
country?
I think it would, yeah. I mean, if you had, let's say you had the likes of David Clifford decided to go over. Let's say that 3 or 4 years ago, Michael Murphy decided to go over. Let's say that Garrod McKiernan, I'm just picking players.
Totally,
of course
yeah.
It would. And yet we have the cream, we have up there in the women's game leaving, and, you know, but as you say, like, but the competition still goes on.
That's it, yeah.
But I think the men's competition would still go on, but people would say, yeah, but Kerry, yeah, but Clifford, yeah, but we didn't have Clifford this year.
Didn't have Tommy Walsh a while back either.
No.
You know?
No.
And he was massive for Kerry back then.
Yeah, but it just feels like there's an awful lot more of the women going over, and it will be
more established.
More established. Yeah. They're the big stars. They're the ones that you're, like, for example, Erica O'Shea, I was so excited to see how she was going to progress after her breakthrough year with Cork. And, you know, we're not going to really get to see that now. And it's only a small thing. And likewise with Vicky too, you know, just the impact they have and the what they can bring. And Sarah Rowe as well, you know, she's a big star in the women's game, and she's not playing now. And when those people aren't there, the interest does wane a little bit. I'm going to throw something else at you, Jim, now. No, we're talking about players going to play different sports, and we were mentioning LIV Golf at the start, so it's been confirmed now that Brooks Koepka is going to play in the second LIV Golf event.
Yeah.
So we're talking about players going to different different sports within the sport, in essence anyway, when you look at
and
the AFL.
Brooks Koepka, what rank would he be like? I mean, I was talking to Greg Annan last week, and he was saying, yeah, well, maybe there's a golfer at a certain point mm-hmm. in their career where they're maybe on the decline that will take, that will head to. But if you're looking at the likes of Brooks Koepka, I mean, he's been a major winner only recently, you yeah. know what I mean? Patrick Reed has gone, hasn't he? I mean, Patrick Reed won the Masters in 2018, you know what I mean? But still, so on the flip of that, I mean, it's good to hear the likes of Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry come out and more or less stringently saying, no, this, you know, we are staying. So it'll be up to see what the PGA Tour will do to keep the players there, you know what I mean, to see will they increase prize money, will they shorten tournaments. I mean, is three rounds the way to go over 54 holes, you know what I mean? So I'm not surprised that the likes of Brooks, I think more and more players at a certain level will probably be tempted, because I believe Tiger Woods, I think he was offered a king's ransom.
Oh, like huge.
If he went, yeah. that would be the really big one, I think, to sway things. I can't see him going, though, at this at this stage anyway, when he seems kind of so determined to get back to where he was before.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And of course, Tiger will be playing in the Open in a couple of weeks' time. We'll see him again at St Andrews as well. But it's often the way, like the way that Phil Mickelson and people have talked about it, it's almost kind of cold. They're somewhat detached and no, I'm doing it and that's it. You know, I'm a golfer. I have to make I have to make a living, even though they're all very well paid. You know what I mean? But it's just where it's coming from. You know, the fact that it's Saudi, and you know what I mean. So.
Well, we'll probably come back to that again in a little while. We'll get back to the women's football, and I wanted to talk to you as well about Sinead Goldrick in an interview that she's done recently. Nadine, just talking about the lack of critical analysis of women's football, that in general it tends to be quite broad, that you know, we don't get into tactics, into matchups, which are so key, especially if you even look at Dublin and Meath and the games that they've had over the last while. Do you think she's right in saying that, or you know, have things progressed a little bit?
Things have definitely progressed, and I think even here we're quite progressive. I know we're limited to time sometimes, but you know, it was one of the reasons that I actually explored getting into a bit of media work, was because I felt that was very much lacking. So it was really refreshing to hear it from Sinead. And now, not that Sinead has ever had any critical analysis, I'd say she'd be a tough one. But you know, I suppose it's always kind of a broad analysis of a game, and again that comes down to the reporter maybe not knowing enough about the game. Mm-hmm. So it's great that in my own position, I suppose, I've played the game, I follow it avidly, I watch all the matches, so I'm able to critically analyse it. So I suppose it's just getting more ex-players perhaps, more people who are heavily invested in it, so that you can give that critical analysis. But absolutely, you know, I remember over the years reading reports etc., and it was never highlighted that somebody even hit a wide. It was never highlighted that somebody had a bad game. Mm-hmm. And then you'd turn the page and it would be a real, you know, analysis. And you don't want to be coming down hard on players. You want to pick out the good bits. You want to pick out the bad bits. But invariably, if a team wins a game, they're doing things right. If a team has lost, invariably then they haven't done things in the best way. That the standards, I suppose, they've set, they haven't hit those standards. And I suppose it's exploring that. And I think also, with respect to the players, you have to give them respect in that you have to analyse it, where the matchups will be, you have to analyse where the strengths will be. And you know, that's what we aim to do on this show on a weekly basis, so we'll continue to do that. And there's also brilliant platforms out there who also do the same. And I'd be writing a piece for The Independent on Sunday. If people want to pick it up, there'll be plenty of critical analysis in there. But yeah, it's definitely progressed. But like anything, I think there's a good bit to go. But it's good to hear players mm-hmm. looking for it. You
James,
know?
From a media perspective?
Yeah, well, I suppose there's been quite a bit of positive coverage about the LGFA over the last couple of years, especially when it comes to the All-Ireland Finals. And they talk about the crowds. And, you know, there was, 53,000 at the 2019 final. Yeah, like, I mean, I'd watch it and I would look at some of the defending. I would look at some of the goalkeeping and would say, that they could be better there.
Would that be, and I say this with all due respect, would that be because you're comparing it to men's football, let's
possibly
say?
Yes.
Which happens, and you know, and they're so different, you know.
I remember the 2019 final, which I didn't think, that was between Dublin and Galway.
Oh yeah, it wasn't a good game.
There was very little scores in the first half. It's terrible game.
I mean,
game.
That was played in a heavy drizzle.
Yeah.
And people would say after, but conditions were testing, you know, and all that. But I thought that year, the standard.
Oh, it was very poor. Very poor. Very you know poor. What I mean? Yeah, it was a poor game.
And I think that should be said.
Yeah, no. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Whereas the final last year was excellent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And yeah. that happens in men's football mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, it
but
is, you know what I mean?
It's, yeah, but it is. It's getting that balance of, yeah. you know, the critical eye. But I really enjoy doing it. And there's a lot of other people out there who do. It's just giving them the opportunity, I suppose.
I think it'll come in time yeah, when that's definitely. The standard that is set. And Nadine and I, James, were here one day and we were critically analysing a certain player. And it was at the very top of the show as well. We uh-huh. opened talking about this certain player and her father sent me a text and said, you know, explained why she'd been playing bad. And I replied and said, you know, sometimes it's hard to hear it, but it just shows that there is progress being made, that we're sitting here on the top of a show speaking about a team and being quite analytical about a different players' performances. And he wrote back, that's fair enough. I'm just not used to hearing it. And, yeah. you know, it just showed as well that people involved in the sport even aren't used to hearing yeah. any criticism yeah. of anybody, but I think we're kind of moving past that now. With that in mind, Nadine, let's get on to the action.
Yes.
Last weekend, Armagh Meath was the one really that everyone was talking about. Did you enjoy it? Was it a good game? It was kind of hard to tell.
Yeah, like it was intriguing.
That's what we always say about games that weren't that brilliant, but were still compelling.
Oh, yeah. yeah, you know, it was intriguing in different ways, I suppose. I mean, the skill level of Amy Mackin alone, mm-hmm. that's enough to you know, say that a game was brilliant. I thought Armagh were really, really good. They've surprised me as the year has gone on. I've always had them up there as maybe the top, maybe number four, number five. They've definitely moved into top three now. Amy was amazing. I'd say they are sick. I'd say they're really disappointed that they didn't win that game. Meath, I don't know with Meath. I kind of think, have they peaked? Did they peak when they played Dublin in that Leinster round robin game? Because since then, things have, to me, gone downhill. I think they'll be happy with that draw. Their kickouts were really pressed. And what Armagh did brilliantly, and other teams haven't done against Meath, Armagh pushed from the top. They pressed them really high up the pitch, whereas other teams feel that because Meath have such pace mm-hmm. and that they transition at such pace, it's like, don't worry, just get back, filter back. Where Armagh were up in their faces, and the Meath defenders actually didn't know what to do. They really struggled in possession, which we don't see. And then, look, Meath's big players, you know, we talk about them all the time. Vicky was relatively quiet. Emma Duggan just isn't having a great season by her standards. You know, she's still capable of hitting a few points from here and there, but, you know, by her standards, things aren't going well. They are the All-Ireland champions. They will get through to the quarterfinals and they will probably come strong again. But, yeah, maybe not the best match, but intriguing and brilliant for Armagh. Really brilliant for Armagh, I think.
So do you think it's shaping up as you expected it to, the championship?
Yes, although Donegal, I thought, would top that group. They're now looking at if Waterford beat Cork by 2 points, which is unlikely, but if that happens, Donegal are out of the championship. So, you know, they're sweating on their progression, which I didn't think would be the case, and it's disappointing for them, but I still think they will get through. So I thought they'd top that group. Cork now top that group. So it's Donegal who will likely meet Dublin. Yeah, the rest of it is shaping up. Galway have been disappointing, really disappointing. At times, brilliant because they're such a lovely team to watch. But yeah, everybody else is going as expected. And I think it's been quality. You know, it has. And I know myself and Damien spoke last week about a few of the games whereby the score was just really poor and there wasn't really much to talk about. But, you know, outside of one or two games, it has been really competitive. And what I'm so intrigued with is Dublin at the minute. They're really coming in as expected on the radar. You know, like their match at the weekend, if you were a neutral, you could think, oh, sure, you know, Dublin beat Tipperary comfortably. What was key for that, every player got a game. Mm-hmm. Carla Rowe got another half an hour under her belt, and Carla Rowe getting a game and a half under her belt in 2 weekends could be the case that Dublin could win the All-Ireland.
Yeah.
And people might miss out on
she's
that,
the
but
catalyst.
It's significant. She's the catalyst.
Yeah, she is.
You know, so little things that you might miss, but no, it's been great.
And of course, Dublin last year being well stung in the All Ireland final, and also as well Cork losing, conceding those 2 goals to me.
Yeah.
So Cork will also feel that we're, you know, close as well. Like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And
if you were to call it at this stage,
I called Dublin at the start of the year. I'm going
to
stick
with
them.
Have to stick with Dublin.
A wounded animal is a dangerous one.
Thing, yeah. Classic sporting line
the case with them, you know, and Mick Bohan is a wonderful coach, and mm-hmm. we talk about Mick a lot on this show, but he seems to have very much figured out a way of beating that Meath defence. And what Mick is very good at is adapting their game to suit, you know, I suppose, the dangers of who they're playing. Yeah. It didn't work for him against Meath in the final last year. I'd say it was one of the few times in his career. So, yeah, Mick will be focused. And Dublin, you know, we talked about the devalue in the championship. You have the best player in the country, Sinead Goldrick, mm-hmm. staying at home for the championship. I know she's going to go back over there, but you know, she puts a huge value on the championship, and it's great to have her back and watching her. And between herself and Carla Rowe, if they stay fit, I think Dublin will be hard to beat. Yeah.
So Nadine, before we finish up on this, just a moment to give to have a little chat about a team for Donna. I know it's something that's really important to you.
Yeah, so Donna Dunyan, actually she was a sister of Barry Dunyan's, who played with Donegal as well. Huge Donegal connections. Donna passed away in February. She had a long battle with cancer, and I was lucky enough to have played with her for a number of years with Donegal underage, and we won a Junior All-Ireland in 03. So her sister-in-law Nicola Lacey has organised a wonderful fundraiser called Hashtag A Team For Donna, and basically what we're asking people to do is get online, get a picture of a team you have played with or you're currently playing with, and nominate three people. One would be the best trainer, the most skillful player, and the biggest joker, which seems to be bringing up a lot of the same people seem to be coming up in a lot of teams. And most importantly, to donate to the Donegal Hospice. So Donna spent time there. They were very good. They looked after her and the family. Just want to give back. And at the weekend, we are playing a challenge game. So it's the 03 Donegal team. I'm not sure how many of us will finish the game, but we're playing a four master selection. And it's just to remember Donna. And if people can donate, it'll be great, because it's a wonderful cause for a wonderful lady.
It really is. And if anybody's looking for information, we're going to send it out from our own social account. So keep an eye on that.